Welcome to the Czech blog. I'm here today with Jator Pierre, Czech faculty member, HLC extraordinaire, and owner and founder of We HLC. I say these things every once in a while because I know Jator is on with me so often, but I don't want to assume that everybody knows you, even though the people really should. And I'm excited today to talk about an issue. This is something that in our field gets talked about all the time. But I don't know, you know, I'm sure you and I would agree that probably most professionals don't address this topic in a way that really helps people long term. So we're going to talk about fat loss. And I'm really excited for you to talk about we're talking about kind of the two sides of this, conceptual sides, the complexity of fat loss and the simplicity of fat loss. This is super cool. So welcome, Jator.
thanks, James. Let's see. This topic is close to my own heart. I started to gain body fat when I was around 9 years old, at a time when my parents recently were divorced. And got to a point of obesity when I was 15, 16 years old. And then from that point on, I've been kind of on this journey of learning to understand what, understand fat from one perspective, fat loss from another perspective, as well as to kind of dive into the mental and emotional roots of my fascination with, wow, it's really fascinating how I started to gain body fat when my parents got divorced. So in my experience of doing this since I was 15 and diving into this information since I was 15 and all of the experiences I've had, I think that there is a tremendous amount of information that really isn't talked about. And in my experience of fat loss, at least from kind of a typical fitness and wellness perspective, what's really focused on, I think even from a nutritional perspective, quite frankly, is this over focus on macronutrients. Everything is macro based, right? Every 10 years, science is essentially changing its mind on which macro is going to kill you, which macro is going to save you. And there's, you know, legit evidence at the time with well done research at the time, which then gets looked at in the future because we know more. We ask better questions, and the science evolves just like everything else. One of the really kind of interesting quotes that I love, and I have no idea if this is true or not, but if you ask, in the past they said, if you ask Einstein how to solve a problem, you give him an hour to solve a problem, Einstein would say, it will take me about 55 minutes to come up with the right questions to ask. And I love that perspective. So science evolves just like everything else. And I don't, for me, this isn't going to be about macros because everyone else talks about macros. And from my experience of doing this personally myself, this might get me in a lot of trouble with a lot of people. Macros don't matter. And we'll get into why that is as we move forward.
There's a t-shirt or a bumper sticker in that.
Yes, macros don't matter.
Yeah.
And there's context to that, so please don't go crazy, leaving me mean messages about, whatever.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about some of the kind of missed ideas around this. So I came up with some ideas to do some videos with you. So some of the things that we're going to kind of address is the mental and emotional aspects or attachments to fat, what fat represents to us. Sleep and fat loss. The brain, and for me, the brain is kind of looking at this from a hierarchical point of view. So when we talk about macros and all of the kind of then hormonal influences that are associated with macros, depending on what research you read. We're forgetting a hierarchical perspective, which is the brain and our ancestral lens and our behaviors and why we do what we do, which is, for me, a much more interesting question to ask than just being extremely focused on macros.
Right. Actually, and I wanted to go to yeah. something that you said that we were talking about before we started this. And there, I think that you sent me a link to a map, this mm-hmm. obesity system influence diagram. And I'm going to put a link to this in the video, but oh my God, right? If you want yeah. to understand why it is that, you know, macros don't matter or to be a little safe, right? They matter a lot less than we think that they matter. Check out this link and look at this map and you're mind blown, right? Just trying yeah. to sift through all of these causal influences on fat gain and retention, right? On obesity yeah. is just, it's amazing. It's amazing. So maybe pause the video, check it out, and then come back. Please come back. Yeah. Do come back. But it's, you need to check out this obesity system influence diagram. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's exquisitely complex. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, kind of as a heading for a lot of what we've talked about in these videos that we've done together, headlines and simplicity are always going to get more clicks yeah. than complex ideas, because yeah. complexity and the deeper complexities and the deeper understandings literally this actually ties into fat loss, mm-hmm. literally requires more energy. Mm-hmm. And it takes more of your energy to then read, spend time, understand, whereas from an energy standpoint, an energy in and energy out standpoint, the brain is very hardwired to protect your energy from a survival standpoint, mm. from an ancestral lens. Mm-hmm. Literally, just yesterday, I was talking with a friend about being in the city and how people that ride their bikes in the city have this illusion that they're actually a pedestrian when they're on their bike. Mm. The truth from the law perspective is that's not actually a pedestrian. You're considered a car or a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And why this comes up from an energy perspective is pretty interesting, because you'll watch bicyclists run red lights, run stop signs, run yellows at major intersections.
Yeah.
And I've never ridden a bike, and I always kind of wondered about that. And there's many, many reasons why that happens, but simply from an energy in and energy expenditure point of view, the human body simply says, okay, if I run these lights and I have momentum, I can conserve energy. Mm. If I stop at stop lines, stop signs, I have to stop, restart, and I have to expend more energy. Mm. So what's fascinating to me about that is at a physiological level, the body's trying to conserve energy. Mm. And it's willing to do that in the face of risking your life.
Yeah.
And literally, yesterday morning, I was talking about this, and a bicyclist ran a red light and got hit by a car right in front of me.
Oh, my God.
And that is the truth, is that, you know, we have this, like, this unconscious idea of, like, oh, I'm trying to get where I want to go. But from a physiological perspective, the body's actually trying to conserve energy. Mm-hmm. And that's back to this brain idea that we're going to look at for fat loss, is looking at it from a behavioral perspective and an ancestral perspective. Mm. And back to this idea of conserving energy. When you look at that from an ancestral lens, it was exquisitely important to conserve energy in an environment when you didn't know when you were going to get your next dose of energy. You didn't know you were going to find a tuber. You didn't know you're going to kill an animal. You didn't know you're going to get the organs and glands. Yeah. That was not guaranteed. So in that environment, it became exquisitely important to the survival of the species to be energy conservationists, essentially, right, and do everything that we can to conserve energy.
Yeah. And the brain is a super energy hungry organ too.
Super energy hungry. So, you know, turn on Discovery Channel and watch lions hunt zebras. What you're going to see is that they will hunt the zebra for a very specific amount of time. if that takes too long and they can't catch an old one or a hurt one, they simply stop. From an energy conservation point of view, to run and chase and sprint for hours on end makes absolutely no sense from survival perspective.
Right.
That's why they hunt old, you know, zebras and young zebras, because they're easier to catch fast. That's energy conservation.
Right.
We do the same thing. So when you look at that from an energy conservation perspective and from a brain perspective and an ancestral lens around fat loss, well, you know, we have these ideas that, you know, people who gain body fat are simply just gluttonous people. And when you look at the complexity of that other chart, you'll see that that's not actually the case. There's many, 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 many facets to this issue, a tremendous amount. But when we look at this just simply from a brain perspective and an ancestral lens, you know, we say, you know, we had this energy lacking around us, so we had to conserve it. And now in modern society, we have 7-Eleven at every corner.
Right.
Whole Foods at every corner. Whatever your take is on energy in is around you all the time. You don't have to worry about when we're going to get our next calories. And, in essence, we are more actually worried about how do we stop ourselves from getting more calories than we need, or more energy than we need.
Right.
So, you know, we kind of judge ourselves for searching that and overeating and trying to get as much as we can in, or we judge these people that do that. But interestingly enough, when you look at this from an ancestral point of view, there's a tribe called the Aceh tribe, which are modern hunter-gatherers, as well as the Catawbans and the Hunzas. And the Aceh tribe, really interestingly, they have gluttonous practices too. What are their gluttonous practices? Well, one of their gluttonous practices is they love honey. So when they're out hunting and gathering, if they find honey, these guys and gals will literally sit down and eat a quart of honey each. Can you imagine eating a quart of honey? I mean, a teaspoon of honey overwhelms me.
Right.
A quart of honey.
Yeah.
But we have to move this into context to understand that. So when we look at it from their point of view, they look at eating a quart of honey as a beautiful, health-giving thing. They don't have access to a quart of honey every day, one.
Right.
Two, when they find it, it's a very energy-dense source for them to sustain themselves for hunting and gathering and when and if they find their next meal.
Right.
So this kind of gluttonous overeating is actually hardwired into us. And it's hardwired into our brain to look for that. To look for these things that are very energy dense to support our systems, because literally from a physiological perspective, our physiology still essentially believes that we're still hunting and gathering. Has no kind of conscious idea that food is readily available for most of us in the industrialized world. So I think that's really fascinating how that's actually hardwired into us. And we look at it from an ancestral lens, that happened ancestrally. But when we do that from a modern perspective, what are we doing? We start to then, one, shame and guilt ourselves, which causes a very, very hard stress response.
Right.
Two, we then, for that shame and guilt, potentially do other things to manipulate that. So we're like, okay, well, we're going to cut way back here, or, you know, undereat here, or I'm going to go throw up, or whatever I'm going to do to kind of deal with the shame, the guilt, and the fear around something that is actually hardwired into us. So if it's hardwired into us, then one of the simplest ways to start looking at fat loss then is to understand these behavioral patterns. So if we understand what we're looking for in our food, then that can help us understand how to reset our drive or our need to search out these kind of very seductive or rewarding foods. So that's kind of this next step, is looking at, you know, taking macros out of it. Because when you actually look at well-done, good research, macros don't matter from the perspective of, and I'm not talking about refined stuff, I'm talking about whole food macros.
Right.
Okay? So let's just get that in context. Because people get really fired up about this stuff. So when you look at well-done, good research, and this, I'm going to speak from my own personal experience too, to tie this into the research, which is, I've gotten under 10% body fat eating a very high protein, low fat, low carbohydrate diet. I've gotten under 10% body fat eating a very high whole food carbohydrate diet, low fat, low protein. I've also gotten under 10% body fat eating those macros in very balanced perspectives. So from what most of us hear, that makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
But from a complexity picture, it makes complete sense when you start to understand this from a brain perspective, that what a lot of these diets are actually doing from a brain perspective is that they're reducing the seductive and rewarding nature of food. So with the reduction in seduction and reward, there's going to be a spontaneous reduction in caloric or energy intake. So what's very rewarding and what's very seductive? Well, we all know refined stuff is generally very seductive, so we can just put that on a side note. We all get that. Yay to that. So we'll set aside this refined argument, because when you look at that from a good science perspective, across the board, that refined food is going to have a global effect on body fat, on metabolic issues, et cetera. So that's clear. But when we look at this from a whole foods perspective, what we want to look at this from is a food reward and seductive value and palatability. So with these kind of diets, what essentially happens is that you're reducing one of the macronutrients, which reduces the food reward or seductive value of the food, which I said spontaneously then creates a caloric deficit. The person eats less calories spontaneously. Now, what's really interesting about that is when you look into the research around this, from an ancestral lens, losing body fat spontaneously is actually less stressful on the body and doesn't elicit the same amount of stress response in the person, which, back to our HPA axis dysregulation, would also affect the ability to lose body fat due to all the stress mechanisms. So spontaneous reduction in calorie equals long-term fat loss, and looking at the food reward slash seduction compared to palatable foods also can elicit fat loss at a much longer term rate. Now, what does that mean?
I was going to just ask you about that, because we've been talking about the loss initially, right? Just the one. But the most important thing, right, is sustainability, right? And I imagine, especially reducing the seductiveness and the reward of food is a huge key in that, sustaining it.
Completely. So, what is, you know, food seductiveness versus palatability? Really interesting. Imagine yourself sitting at home and you made a steak with no salt. You just cooked it. A potato with no salt, no butter, and kind of steamed veggies. Imagine that, and imagine, would you be able to overeat that?
It seems pretty bland.
It seems pretty bland.
Yeah.
It's palatable.
Yeah.
You could eat it because you needed it. You know you need it. But it's not very rewarding.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll take the potato as the best example, I think. So let's just say it was the potato, plain baked potato. You were really hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Plain baked potato with no fat, no salt.
Mm.
Well, you're really hungry. Let's just say you just did a long run mm-hmm. and you wanted to refuel with some good starchy carbohydrate.
Yeah.
You would probably eat, let's say, maybe you could eat one or two potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would just naturally hit this full place. Mm. Because the food is very palatable, it doesn't elicit this hedonistic response and dopamine response in the brain.
Yeah.
Now, if I put a bag of chips in front of you with fat, salt, and carbohydrate fried in, let's say, coconut oil, I guarantee you, you'll eat the whole bag.
Yeah.
I'll eat the whole bag. And one of the reasons why is that it's very rewarding and seductive. Now, what's fascinating about that is you have the baked potato with no fat, no salt. And then you have, which is, let's say you'd eat one or two tops. Then you have the bag of chips. You eat a bag of chips, a big one, that's five potatoes. You can easily put away five potatoes with the very high reward seduction value. But with just the palatability, you're not going to overeat.
Yeah.
It just, it cuts out the dopamine response. It cuts out the reward. And it's sending a very different signal to the brain. So then you get this spontaneous reduction in calorie.
Yeah.
If you look at kind of some of my friends who do bodybuilding, when they're doing like a pre-show diet, it's very bland diet. And let's just say they're eating 70% carbohydrate from white rice, steamed broccoli, and protein. It's very bland, but most of my friends have to force themselves to eat that because it's not rewarding.
Right.
You actually, like, a lot of these guys and girls have to like force themselves to get in enough calories because they're eating such non-rewarding food. Now, am I saying now that the key to fat loss is to eat unpalatable food?
Yeah, that's right.
What's really interesting, maybe I am. And what's fascinating about that.
And this is when people come around to this idea that macros don't matter, right? Because it's not rewarding at all.
What's interesting about that then is like, it's not that it has to be bland. It just means, you know, reduce the amount of salt that you use to flavor, reduce sauces, reduce all the things that you do to food to make it more rewarding and taste good. If you want to lose body fat, one of the easiest ways to do that is to just reduce the reward value of your food. It doesn't mean it has to be completely bland. You want it to be palatable, right? So I like potatoes with butter and salt.
I could
probably put away two potatoes if I do that.
Yeah.
But I'm still not going to put away five potatoes.
Right.
Like I would in a fried food.
Right.
So that's palatable for me.
Mm.
But I'm not going to overeat it. I'm not going to ingest a ton of it.
Mm.
So it's finding things that are palatable that you enjoy but aren't extremely rewarding.
Right.
What happens is then you get that spontaneous reduction in caloric intake.
Yeah.
What's fascinating about that is because it's spontaneous, it doesn't elicit the same amount of starvation response that a conscious cutting of calories will do.
Yeah.
It actually, the response from the body actually is reduced and it doesn't go into a fear state because it's not being consciously starved.
Yeah.
It actually feels like it's being nourished because it's eating palatable foods that are satiating it.
Yeah.
And giving it what it needs.
Yeah. So there's a question is coming to me, and it sort of piggybacks on this, but it also gets into the mental and emotional side, and so maybe we should table it. But what I'm starting to think about is if you take away much of the reward of eating, it takes away a pleasurable experience, right, in people's lives. And so you immediately worry that there will be this resistance to doing that, right? That makes it very challenged to doing that because, well, eating was one of the things, one of my sole moments of enjoyment, right, during my day. And now I have to, at best, reduce that.
Yes. Yeah. So that's beautifully said. What's really interesting is that if you take how you used to eat, let's say 20 years ago, let's say mm-hmm. you ate, let's just, I'll take myself, standard American diet.
Yeah.
And not so standard. My parents aren't from this country, so, but yeah. basically standard yeah. American diet.
Yeah.
Lots of sugar, lots of salt.
Yeah.
Lots of fried foods, lots of very rewarding foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I've changed my diet and gone to more of just kind of this whole food, non-processed perspective, that change from the original to kind of the whole food perspective, that came with this reduction in reward.
Mm.
That also came with this, oh, well, it's not going to be as pleasurable anymore.
Mm.
That's not true. Over time, what I eat now is actually very pleasurable and mm-hmm. enjoyable. And I've learned ways to make foods very, very, very palatable and tasty
mm.
with not the same level of reward. It still has right. its reward,
yeah.
but not the same level as the prior diet.
Right.
And what we're saying here is then, okay, so let's say you're now at this kind of whole food eating.
Mm.
The next step for that, if you want to lose body fat in yeah. an easy way, is then to reduce that even further. So take your whole foods diet, think about quality, not quantity,
mm-hmm.
and just reduce the amount of sauces, herbs, kind of all the extras mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. you put on your food. Make food just much more simple,
mm-hmm.
and you will immediately get a reduction in how much you intake.
Yeah.
And then you can do the work around, okay, well, what does food represent to me?
Yeah.
What is getting pleasure from food represent to me?
Yeah.
Where did I learn that food is the way that I get pleasure?
Yeah.
And all these kind of other ideas around what food represents to us.
Mm.
And again, using then the rewarding foods as you know, celebrations during your week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So allow that for yourself. And also allow yourself to explore what may be actually very rewarding to one person. This is now from a mental and emotional perspective, may not be as rewarding to another person in terms of the mechanics of, am I going to overeat that?
Yeah.
As an example, I love bananas, right? Mm-hmm. So I could sit down and eat two bananas.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. They're delicious.
Mm.
But then you give me bananas and almond butter with some salt, I could eat six bananas and a whole jar of almond butter. Now, that's very rewarding to me.
Yeah.
Now, why is that rewarding to me? Well, interestingly enough, when you reverse engineer back to my childhood, my mom used to make me peanut butter and banana sandwiches.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have an association not only with the carbohydrate, the salt, the fat, I also have an association with my mom caring for me, taking care of me, being there. That also has this very kind of seductive effect, right? We yeah. look for things that are pleasurable, and that's how we're wired.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So is there going to be this kind of juggling effect of, okay, if I've made food my pleasure, am I going to do some deep exploration around why that is so that I can slowly change it to a more palatable diet?
Mm.
Does that mean that I can't have sauces, that I can't add these extra things? No, it doesn't. It simply means to be mindful of that, pay attention to it, and do some experimentation on yourself. So I've been experimenting with this with myself just to see what happens internally around my relationship with food.
Yeah.
And so I gave this example of bananas and almond butter. So what I tried to do last night is I had banana and almond butter, but with no salt.
Mm, okay.
I was completely satisfied after eating one.
Mm-hmm.
Two nights before that, I had banana, almond butter with salt.
Mm-hmm.
I had three bananas and a lot more almond butter.
Yeah.
And I find that super fascinating.
Mm.
So, you know, the beauty of this is that, yes, the food will just simply be more palatable and simple.
Mm.
The other side of that is you get this with what comes along with this spontaneous reduction in calorie, is also a reduction in what's called your adipostat. It's your body fat set point. And there's a lowering of your body fat set point the more palatable the foods are that you eat.
Can you just say what you mean by set point?
Yeah, so, you know, when you're in a house that you have air conditioning on, and you put it at, let's say you put it at 70, so it turns on when it goes below 70,
yeah.
It turns on to cool it when it goes above 70.
Yeah.
So you have that same, we each have that at different levels in our body of where our set point, in terms of where the body feels comfortable with body fat percentage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's just say my body feels comfortable, let's say at 16%.
Yeah.
So if I go over 16% from an energy conservation standpoint, my body will reduce hunger and uptick the amount of movement that I do spontaneously to bring me back down to 16. The same thing happens if I go below 16. My body will increase hunger and reduce my need to move to conserve energy to bring me back up to that set point.
Yeah. Okay, so gotcha.
It's a negative feedback loop.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting about that, so you have this kind of food reward, seductive value, dopamine response, where we associate these very rewarding, seductive foods with a dopamine response. We associate with that, so then we see it in our environment. It triggers this dopamine. Mm-hmm. We want to go have more of it. We have more of it. Because, again, back to the Aceh tribe, right? We need that. The body thinks it needs that. Mm. We have more of it. And that actually raises up your body fat set point to allow you to ingest more calories. So then you think about it from the perspective of, you know, hedonistic food, seductive food, rewarding food.
Mm-hmm.
Eating that all the time
actually
can push up your set point.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, you start to look at that. Okay, so we have this set point, we have palatability, we have food reward seductiveness, and then we have like our daily kind of movement. I've been really paying attention to this in myself. So like today is a double day for me. So I went and worked, did my gym workout this morning, and this afternoon I will play hockey. This fascinates me, James. My body, after I play hockey this afternoon, will literally, unconsciously, I will want to simply lay down the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I want to sit more.
Yeah.
I want to lay down in Netflix. I won't want to go for, you know, my 10,000 steps.
Yeah.
I have this urge to do less. And I have an urge to eat more.
Yeah.
And that fascinates me. So when you look at this from kind of a workout perspective, and why, you know, cardiovascular exercise can also be, for many, many other reasons, be detrimental to this fat loss, is that if you do a ton of cardiovascular exercise, a ton of output, when you look at good, well-done research around that, you're doing hours at a time or whatever, those people the rest of the day have a complete reduction in how much output they want to do.
Yeah.
The body's trying to conserve. So I'm looking at this from a brain perspective and an ancestral perspective, not a macro perspective, because when you can understand the behaviors,
yeah,
and you can understand it from an ancestral lens, and then you can tie in the mental and emotional lens, then we start to get understandings of why it's not just about macros. It's not just about calories.
Right.
It's not just about you know, toxicity in the environment. It's not just about gut health. It's not just about sleep. It's not just about your relationships to the outside world, community, pleasure, play. It's about all of that.
So I'm trying to put together, this is really fascinating, so put together the ancestral points that you're making with the sort of mental, the brain points, right? And so the big thing, as I'm hearing you say from the ancestral point of view in a way, is that we evolved in an environment where food sources could be scarce or periodic, and therefore our bodies were sort of tune to think, well, when you find a food, when you find a resource, you eat it because you don't know when you're going to get it again, right?
You overeat it.
Yeah, right. And then on top of that, this is really fascinating. I didn't know that we have like a food thermostat, a body fat thermostat almost, right? Yeah. And that can be changed in our, especially so in our new environment, because we don't have scarcity anymore, right? In the same way. So you're swimming in a sea of food that is often, like with processed food, you have all these additives to make it super rewarding.
Yeah.
And your ancestral brain is saying, eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it. And then that thermostat gets changed so that your set point creeps up and up and up and up.
Yeah. I'm going to kind of shoot off the hip here with a number.
Mm.
But there is... It is a multi-billion-dollar industry to create foods that are seductive and rewarding to the human.
Yeah.
It's designed that way.
Mm.
Processed foods are designed that way because this isn't new stuff.
Yeah,
it's complex stuff. So we don't really want to focus on it because we actually have to take our videos are usually an hour long. Most people, in my experience these days, is like 2-minute videos is what gets a lot of attention. So there's a depth to this, and they're essentially from an ancestral lens. Our current environment, everything is working against us in terms of being healthy and well. There is a big discrepancy between current environment and our physiology.
Yeah.
And that discrepancy is what is leading to all these chronic diseases, obesity being one of those.
Yeah.
And that food that surrounds us, again, me being an obese kid, it took a lot of time and effort and mindfulness around what foods were very seductive to me to slowly move those out of my diet when I was a kid.
Mm.
I mean, I can remember time sitting down and literally playing video games and eating a whole row of Chips Ahoy cookies with milk.
Mm.
Easy.
Yeah.
And just dipping and eating, because it was so seductive and rewarding that from a brain perspective, my brain shuts off my ability to feel satiated because it's just like the Aceh tribe. Time to overeat. Let's get this all in because we need to conserve. We live in an environment where we don't know when our next food's coming.
Yeah.
So all of this is kind of a process and looking at, where are you at?
Mm.
And where is your client at if you work with clients? And start that process where they're at. So if it's standard American diet where they're at now, it might be slowly taking things out of that to move them to what I think Sean Cruxton says best, which is JERF, just eat real food.
Right.
So moving towards just this kind of whole food perspective. Mm. And then moving toward this now palatable perspective. Because someone going from standard American diet, slowly moving to just eat real foods, that's already going to be a spontaneous reduction in calories because it's not going to be as rewarding as the food prior.
Right.
And this would be like the next step.
Yeah.
And I've been experimenting with this stuff with myself. I've been not adding, I love salt, and I haven't been adding salt to my food. And it is fascinating how much less I eat. I mean, I'm literally shocked.
Yeah.
Because it's, before I could eat, I can eat. I can put away some good amount of food with salt included.
Yeah.
And I'll have the same meal without salt, and literally I will feel full eating 3/4 to half of what I did before without this worry of I'm going to elicit this fear response and this starvation defense because it's not going to happen to the same level because my body actually feels satiated.
Yeah.
And my body fat percentage set point goes down.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is to go, you've been experimenting, and I think that's great. And I was going to say, after you've been on these sort of less rewarding palatable diets to, if you go back and you try some of those foods that you were eating before, it blows you away. So, a few weeks ago, I had a donut from this sort of gourmet donut shop, Top Pot, for people who are in the Seattle area. I had an apple fritter, and oh my god, it's like those episodes of The Simpsons where Homer sort of overindulges and wakes up the next morning and covered in drool and crumbs. I just had one, but the sugar rush from that was this amazing sort of roller coaster. And so you don't realize how much you do sort of recalibrate in ways to the rewards or away from them.
Yeah.
Until you run these experiments.
And I love that calibration, because I've had that same experience. And, what's happened to me over the years now is my reward, if I literally couldn't eat that donut, because it's what's interesting is like that donut now to me actually doesn't feel rewarding. I'll give you a story. This happened, 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. So I haven't had a burrito in God knows how long.
Yeah.
And here in San Francisco, we have this great burrito place called Chihuahua. Mm-hmm. And it's organic, gluten-free tortillas. Mm-hmm. Now they cook industrial seed oils, but this is like, okay, I want to try this. I want to have a burrito.
Yeah.
This fascinates me. So I got a burrito. I got chips, guacamole, and I was having a blast. I was, oh man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Ate it, completely enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Completely enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I know, I started to get this flavor in my mouth where I felt like a lot of saliva building up. And I was like, this is weird.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my, holy shit. I was like, I have to throw up.
Oh wow.
And literally, I went to the bathroom, and I was standing there, and I threw up the whole burrito.
Wow.
Now, I didn't stick my finger down my throat.
Yeah.
Simply saying that my body, whatever was in there, it was rewarding to my brain, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
My body said no.
Yeah.
And what's now become my rewarding foods, honestly, I love bananas, almond butter.
Mm-hmm.
And salt, like that's one of my rewarding foods.
Mm-hmm.
There's a company, they're called Siete, S-I-E-T-E.
Mm.
They make these cassava flour, pork lard, coconut oil tortillas.
Wow.
That literally taste like a flour tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
I just throw them on the fire, both sides, and make a fajita.
Wow.
And I did experiments with this too. I made some fajitas without salt, but it had everything else. Salsa, avocado, steak, and tortilla. I had two fajitas.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of days later, I did the same thing, added salt.
Mm-hmm.
Four fajitas.
Wow.
And that is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So, this reward, seductiveness, palatability, and then also understanding and paying attention to and being really mindful of your need to conserve energy.
Mm.
So like today I worked out, I'm going to go play hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I'm going to do then is, because I work at home majority of the time, I'm actually not going to stay home today. I'm going to be out and I'm going to go get lunch with a friend, go for a walk.
Mm.
Because innately I know if I'm home, I will have this overwhelming sense lay down. Not because I'm tired.
Yeah.
To lay down to my, because at a physiological brain level, my body is, you just spent a lot of calories. So we need to reduce output and we're going to make you hungry as hell. And that's why one reason why body fat loss is so complex, because when you're going through this, you are literally going against your physiology and hardwired survival mechanisms.
Mm.
And that's why the palatability way of doing it can be so helpful, because that sidesteps all of this, the hard wire. Your body actually is getting what it needs. It feels completely nourished, and there's a spontaneous reduction in calorie and a spontaneous reduction in your body fat set point.
Yeah.
Then, you know, once you get down to a lower percent body fat and you have these kind of six principles and four doctors and you're working on that stuff too, and that's all in place.
Yeah.
Then if you still want to do other things, then you can start playing other games with macronutrients, et cetera, and experimenting with what macronutrient profile is going to help you get, if that's what your goal is, leaner or perform better. And what fascinates me, even not just from a research perspective, but also from a personal perspective and a client perspective, is, you know, when we look at this from genetics, epigenetic expression, exposome, all the things that we've talked about there, all of those things are influenced too, that some people will do better on a lower carb, you know, higher protein fat diet. As we know, we call them polar types. Some people will do better on higher starch, lower fat, lower protein. We call them equatorial. That's the middle guys. Equatorial types. And then some people do better in the mix. And that takes experimentation. And at these kind of far ends of extremes in diet, there's also detriment that come when you're doing an extreme diet that isn't facilitating your underlying genetic and genetic expression and the context in which you're living.
Yeah.
So I know we're going to get to practical, so...
Well, you've already been there. I mean, I think the idea of reducing the reward, reducing the seduction, the seductivity, the seductiveness, one of those two, of food right there, right, is a very simple... I like this complexity simplicity, right? It's a simple strategy to reduce your caloric intake.
And, you know, from a Czech perspective... Our perspective is more so we get healthy to get lean. We don't get lean to get healthy. So first steps are always, okay, six principles, four doctors. Start to implement those. Slowly turn them into new habit patterns. Don't overwhelm yourself. Then we move into simple foods. Reduce salt maybe. Reduce sauces. Reduce the reward value. It's interesting. This reward value doesn't only happen with, you know, these conglomerate companies. It also happens in our own homes. We want to make it when you don't invite people over and serve baked potato with no salt and no butter. You invite people over and you got the Kerrygold and the sea salt out.
That's right.
Because you want to be recognized as a good chef, want to make it very rewarding. So reduce that. Some other practical things then is mindfulness around energy and energy conservation. So on the days that you have your workouts, make sure that you're also getting in your 7,000 to 10,000 steps. That's going to be reductive to stress. That's going to uptick oxygen intake. That's going to help heal HPA access. That's going to start to adjust the microbiome and the composition of the bacteria that live within you. All these things that we've talked about in the past. So be mindful of when on the days that you have your workouts and your goal is to lose body fat in conjunction with getting healthier, it's probably not the best idea then to just lay around the rest of the day. That doesn't mean you need to go work out the rest of the day, but right now, you know, I shoot all my videos at a stand-up desk, so I've been standing for the last hour or 2 hours. Pay attention to your behaviors around food. What is seductive to you? What is rewarding to you? What is palatable to you? Where are the adjustments that you can make that you're still enjoying your food, but you don't feel this dopamine desire response to just gorge yourself. Pay attention to that and watch that. You know, I might get fired from the Czech Institute for saying that.
Oh dear.
But this is really interesting to me. Like, I don't personally count calories until I want to count calories. So So what I mean by that, is there a time and place to look at calories in versus, and I don't mean calories versus calories in versus calories out, because the out's a little bit irrelevant.
Right.
For me, it's more about being mindful at some point to pay attention to what your caloric intake is. That's not for everybody. But some people might need that as a platform to help them, especially once they get down to lower percentage of body fat, if they want to continue to go lower.
Yeah.
Then again, exploring, why do you want to go lower? What does that mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to you to be super ripped and see every muscle in your body?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you're going to garner or gain from that, from an emotional perspective? So kind of turning that in. Because it is so complex, I really, personally, I'm not a fan of just saying, like, this is the way and it's the only way. It's really contextual. So if I have some clients that don't need to count any calories, who eat rewarding diets, and get lean, yes, I do. Do I have clients who need to go to a palatable-only diet to lose body fat, gain a different relationship of what food represents to them, etc.? I do. Do I have clients who fall in between those spectrums, who want to eat rewarding foods but want to use caloric intake as their guide? I do. So it's like, how do I find – it's finding the language and the measurement and the expression that fits for them. Maybe not projecting our agenda onto them and saying, this is how you have to do it. It's more so, which one of these pathways is going to feel best for you? And that's where it comes back to the sustainability idea.
Because
that, at the end of the day, for me, is what the best food in the world is, food that you feel like you can sustain on for the rest of your life. What do you feel satisfied eating, enjoy, maybe some's rewarding, maybe some's palatable, for the long term? Because this is a long-term game. If you play the short-term game, and for most people, it's just going to be this yo-yo. The long-term game.
Yes, it is. Wow. Well, this is great. And I think that it does... I really like the way that you put this together, sort of understanding the complexity, but the ways that you embrace and work with that complexity doesn't have to be sort of overwhelmingly complicated.
Yeah, it can be really simple. And that's what I really love about this kind of palatability perspective is I've never experienced something that's more simple than that. Just reducing the reward value of your food, you will get spontaneous reduction in body fat.
That's great. I will say that I'm hungry now.
And that's interesting on kind of a, the flip side of that. Weight gain side. Hypertrophy side is, okay, cool. You can use the reward system as a way to help you get more calories in, get more nutrients in. And support that weight gain perspective.
That's interesting. That's something we should address in another video also, is weight gain.
Yeah, for sure.
Fascinating. Well, this is great. This was monumentally epic for our usual videos. But that's great, because I love the framing, and I like the way that you're highlighting the complexity. So this is fantastic. Thanks, Jator. Thank you very much.
Thanks, James. Awesome. Yeah.
Good. And so, because this seems like it'd be a great ongoing series. So what do you see us tackling in the next video?
Yeah, I think we could do the mental and emotional aspect.
Great. Good deal. Well, thanks again, Jator, and thanks for everybody stopping by. We'll make sure below is audio, so if you want to take our conversation with you can download the audio. And we'll speak again soon, Jator.
All right, brother. Thank you.